So we're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 37, the killing of the Keshi demon and Vyomasura. And we're as far as texts 10 and 11. So it's 10:37, 10 and 11. I'll just begin reading. Narada called out Krishna's name twice. Krishna, Krishna, out of great bliss, while thinking himself as just a semblance of a devotee who praises the Lord by the Sankirtan of his holy names. Narada Muni said, "No one can measure or understand your mind, Atma Manaha. Therefore, who can ascertain what's on your mind, whether you intend to remain in Vraja, giving joy to your parents and the other Vrijvasis, or whether you'll go to Mathura. As the controller of Yogamaya, Yogesha, you can easily stay in both places without difficulty. And as the master of the universe, Jagat Ishara, you must kill the demons who burden the earth." Hint, Mathura. "You are famous as the son of Nanda, but now you should become known as the son of Vasudeva or Vasudeva, thus generating his good fortune. Therefore, come, live in Mathura and relieve all your devotees." Now, I think I made a mistake. I began where we were supposed to end. We're going to go back. We'll begin where we're supposed to begin. Sorry about that. Okay, so we're reading starting from text 7. But it's still nice. Text 7. As Lord Krishna, hasn't finished Keshi yet. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Keshi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground dead. Yay. Vishwanath writes, "Expelling stool, Keshi expired." Jiva Goswami writes, "By Krishna's arm, which completely expanded, sam edama nena, Keshi's breathing was blocked. He expanded his arm until Keshi's body burst. By that, the demon died." Narada says in Harivamsa, quote, "When your arm extended to your knee made his body fall, he quickly died by the Creator's will." And that's it for text 7. Here's text 8. The mighty armed Krishna withdrew his arm from Keshi's body, which now appeared like a long karkatika fruit. So that's going to be explained. Karkatika fruit. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. Vishwanath writes, Keshi's body burst open like an overripe melon. In spite of killing the big demon, Krishna was not proud, since he did it very easily. The deva sprinkled flowers and also water to relieve Krishna of fatigue. Jiva Goswami explains, the analogy with the Karkatika fruit is described in Vishnu Purana. Quote, Keshi's body was split into two parts, each with 2 feet, half a back and tail, one ear, one eye, and one nostril. Unquote. Though he had effortlessly killed the enemy, Krishna did not feel pride mixed with astonishment, thinking, I have killed him. Having killed the enemy, he continually smiled, since he killed the demon without effort. Parashara says, that means Vishnu Purana, says, without fatigue and in good health, Krishna stood and smiled. Having showered flowers, the devatas showered many more flowers. Parashara then describes what happened after this. Quote, when Keshi was killed, the cowherds and gopis were astonished. They praised lotus-eyed Krishna, attractive with anurag. Next, Vaishampayana says, quote, seeing Keshi dead, the cowherds and their wives were overjoyed. They were free of all obstacles and fatigue. They welcomed beautiful Krishna according to age and place with pleasing words and worshipped him again and again. And there's a little repeat, but that's okay. Sanatan Goswami writes, the analogy with the Karkatika fruit is described in Vishnu Purana, same. Keshi's body was split into 2 parts, each with 2 feet, half a back and tail, one ear, one eye, and one nostril. He withdrew his arm, since his back had been split open, or by expanding it from within. His arm is called huge, because it expanded within Keshi's body, or it was by nature huge. It is by nature, unlimited. Though very small, the Lord is very large. And though very large, he is also very small. So expansion, quote unquote, is from an external view. Though he easily killed the demon, he was not proud. Avismitaha. And from Vishnu Purana, Krishna remained there without pain and smiled. Now, without fear, the devatas became joyful and showered many flowers. The devatas, who showered blessings on others, showered flowers on Krishna. By killing Keshi, their giving blessings was fulfilled. And the last is, out of great joy, they gave many blessings to the cowherds. The word sura means those who give glory. And text 9, my dear king, so Shukadev narrating, thereafter, Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the great sage among the demigods Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord, who effortlessly performs his pastimes, purport. After speaking with Kamsa, Narada went to see Lord Krishna. The Lord's Vrindavan pastimes were nearly completed, and Narada wanted to see those he would enact in Mathura. Vishwanath writes, Narada began to praise Krishna, that's the next verse, in order to request him to show his Mathura pastimes after having completed his Vraja pastimes. Narada is called Bhagavata Pravara because he fulfilled the exalted desires of the devotees of Mathura. He spoke to Krishna, who performs actions like killing Keshi without being harmed. Aklish tena karmanam. In further commentary, he writes, now that your Vraja Leela is completed, please show your Mathura Leela. Thus requesting Sri Krishna, Narada Muni, the sage among the demigods, praised his Lord and Master. And again, Narada is called Bhagavata Pravara because he fulfilled the exalted devotees' desires in Mathura. The exalted desires of the devotees in Mathura. He spoke to Krishna, who effortlessly killed Aklishta Karmanam, the ferocious Keshi demon. And Jiva Goswami writes, I offer respects to Narada, sage of the devatas, the greatest devotee, the guru of Krishna's devotees, who sets in motion the pastimes of Krishna. Because the topic was confidential, Narada spoke to Krishna in private. Narada was not just a relater of news, but was the friend of all. He did this in order to prevent Vraja from being attacked by Kamsa's and Jarasandha's troops and to arrange for Kamsa's and others' liberation. Narada was Devarshi. He was a deva and a sage, since he had spiritual knowledge and was the revealer of Krishna's mantras. Thus, he has most confidential knowledge. He was the best of the devotees, Bhagavata Pravara, who were qualified for pastimes. Thus, he acted in this way to facilitate those pastimes. He came secretly and then offered information. Sanatan Goswami writes, I offer respects to Narada, the sage of the devas, sage of the devatas, the greatest devotee, the guru of Krishna's devotees, who sets in motion the pastimes of Krishna. Devarshi indicates that he was dedicated to acting for the devatas. He met with Krishna intimately, Upa. He came in such a way that no one saw him. Since his conversation was secret, he spoke to him alone. He had no hatred for the Lord, Bhagavata Pravara, the best among devotees, the guru concerning bhakti, dedicated only to bhakti. Thus he was not a spy. He spoke in order to protect the devotees, both the devatas and the yadavas. His name is not mentioned out of respect. Oh, king, just as kings like you strive to protect the citizens, Narada strives to protect all the devotees. Someone may say, it is not proper for Kamsa with his wicked wrestlers to bring the Lord to Mathura. In reply, Krishna's actions are without suffering. Aklishta karmanam, as in killing Putana. His actions are immediately done, such as killing Keshi. He will easily kill Kamsa. there's no need to worry at all. Someone else may say, since he is absorbed in an ocean of rasa by playing in Gokula, one should not take him away. The reply, he is Krishna, the person who gives bliss to all. He must also give bliss to the Yadavas. Since he gives bliss to all, he performs pastimes eternally in Braja also. Paragraph. The friends went a little distant in order to show everyone the astonishing nature of his killing Keshi. Thus, Narada was alone with Krishna. Or Krishna, knowing that Narada had arrived with an announcement that would give great pain to the people of Gokula, he sent everyone off on some pretext. According to Parashra and Vaishapayana, Narada spoke invisibly from the sky. Quote, hearing the words of Narada, the cause of divine music, the cowherds, taking Krishna, entered Vraja. And last sentence here. This is from another kalpa. Harivansha also says that after Krishna killed Arishta, Kamsa spoke to the Yadavas to incite them falsely and spoke also to Vasudeva and Nanda. They then condemned Kamsa for his words. The Andakas also spoke. So that's Harivansha's reference. And just to finish where I had intended to finish, so Narada Muni says to Krishna, 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 unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of all the universe, O Vasudev, shelter of all beings and best of the Yadus, O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart, like the fire dormant within kindling wood. You are the witness within everyone, the supreme personality and the ultimate controlling deity. He's going to make a request, so it's not just buttering him up, it's appropriate coming before a great personality to speak this way. Vishwanath writes, Narada called out Krishna's name twice out of great bliss, remembering himself as just a reflection of bhakti who chants the names and praises of the Lord. Krishna is a person with a mind that cannot be measured or understood, aprameya atma. Who can understand your mind? For sometimes you're in Vraja, giving bliss to your parents, and sometimes you're in Mathura, hint, giving bliss to your parents there. As you are the controller of Yogamaya, Yogesha, you can stay in both places without difficulty. You are the master of the universe, Jagadishwara. And as such, you must kill the demons who are a burden to the earth. Another hint. As Nanda's son, you spread your fame through various mantras, but now you should reveal good fortune to Vasudeva. Therefore, come and live in Mathura and relieve all your devotees there from fear of Kamsa, because you are the best fulfiller of desires, Pravara, and the best among the Yadus, Sattvatam. You can do anything, Prabhu, Krishna. I act according to my desires, so why are you making a request of me? Narada, as the super soul within me, Tvam Atma, you give me the inspiration to request you, so what can I do? You exist not only in me, but in all living entities, sarvabhutanam. You reside secretly like fire within wood. Just as you rest in the caves of Govardhan as Nanda's son, so you rest within the hearts as Supersoul. Though you are resting in the heart, you are the witness of everything, Sakshi. This is because you are the greatest person, Mahapurusha, with the strength to accomplish anything. However, above great persons, there can be others with more power, but you are the Supreme Lord with powers greater than anyone else. Narada is a, for readers of the Bhagavatam, Narada's position is exalted. And I've come to understand persons that aren't readers of the Bhagavatam don't have that same regard. It's at least there are some that consider him like a farcical character and not to be taken seriously. And but we find he's a very important personality. He understands Krishna's pastimes. And in ways that very creative and mysterious, he facilitates those pastimes. So a case in point specific to this topic is his two visits to Kamsa. And he says things that we wouldn't say. Kill all the children of Vasudeva and Devaki. And that, you know, Vasudeva cheated you. He, who never lies, cheated you. You know, the eighth sile of Devaki, guess what? Confirmation. He's over there. Go get him. And one of the ways to get him is you bring him here, you can finish him. So, that's not something we would do. But he's precipitating and hastening the Lord's pastimes because he knows, in addition to his loving nature and loving the devotees in Braja, there's other functions for him to perform, the killing of demons and liberating Vasudeva and Devaki and so on. And so many other circumstances, you know, besides his, how he preaches to this one, that one, the other one. He just has this uncanny ability to come parachuting in at the right time in the right place and say the right things and bring people to bhakti, because he's the bearer of the Lord's bhakti shakti. He's an empowered incarnation. And he does his job very well. And in different circumstances, he's engaged in conversations with different people. He's really a special person, bringing the pastimes forward and bringing those who are distant from Krishna to Krishna Bhakti. He instructed Vyas how to do what Vyas did. Very special personality. Emphasis being given in these commentaries that we just read, he's representing the devatas, you know, but the devatas are representing Krishna, so he's representing Krishna by representing the devatas. And he's representing their higher interests, not the other kinds, because the devatas aren't shuddha bhaktas, or pure devotees, but he's representing their interest. And the interest specifically is killing of demons. Of course, he's killed a number of them in Braja, but there's a whole lot more. And in various ways, the whole lot more arrangements are made for his killing them. One of the commentaries about after killing Kamsa, who was like, you know, number one, or one of the main demons for which Krishna appeared to kill, when the two wives of Kamsa went to their father, Jarasandha, appealing, take revenge. And Jarasandha came and Krishna annihilated single-handedly his entire army. He let him go. And with the commentary says, this is a good arrangement. I can just stay here in Mathura, you know, bring all so many demons that I came into this world to annihilate, and he'll just make it easy for me. He'll bring them all and I can finish them all. The flow, there's no interruption in the flow of Krishna's pastimes that seamlessly moves from one thing to the next thing, even from one moment to the next moment. Like after the Damodar Leela knocking over the twin Arjuna trees, and after the twin Arjuna trees are knocked over, astonishing the elders and inviting them to perform rituals for the protection of Krishna, and because, you know, to incite their parental affection. Just seamlessly moves from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. Loving exchange and perfectly customized for each devotee to receive his mercy. And here, like many other places, Narada has a key role. Now, in his Braja Leela, he doesn't show up so much, but after that he certainly does, or here to move him on to the next pastimes. There's one commentary that says, Krishna was having so much fun in Vrindavan, if Narada hadn't come to say, hey, there's some other service for you over there and over there. He would have just stayed in Braja, and his purpose for appearing wouldn't have been fulfilled. And so he did. That's another reason why doing what he did. But he just, he's inspired. Krishna is within his heart, and he knows all about Krishna. We've been hearing in the evening class, the Dasya Bhaktas, those that understand the supremacy, the omnipotency, the divinity of Krishna, that's Narada's position. In one sense, he's a Vaikunthavasi, but he has this opportunity to be involved in Krishna's pastimes in Braja and Mathura and Dwarka. So, which is mercy, and it's stimulating his Krishna bhakti. But he's a Brijvasi, excuse me, he's a Vaikunthavasi in the general mood. Just like Shivas Pandit is a Vaikunthavasi. We were twice narrated that passage from Chaitanya Charitamrita when Shivas Pandit sees the deity of Lakshmi in procession in Hara Panchami festival. And he just goes over the top about, just see the opulence of the goddess of fortune. There's no such opulence like that in Vrindavan. So, you know, he's a Vaikunthavasi, Narada. But the Vaikunthavasi Narada is intimately associating with Krishna here in Vraja, and Srivas is intimately associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's not, you know, it's Vaikunthavasi plus. It's in a special category because he does understand Krishna's supreme position and the supreme good fortune of the residents of Vraja. But he is coming to interrupt his pastimes in Vraja. But it's not against Krishna's desire. It conforms with Krishna's desire and keeping his promise that he made to the demigods and to his devotees outside of Vraja. He is the protector of all. The pastime, although he's the shelter of everyone and everything, his pastimes, which are really fascinating, it's the Bhagavan feature. He's fulfilling the desires of all of his devotees. And, you know, in very, very wonderful ways. That's his pastimes. That's what he does. He fulfills the desire of his devotees. And he enjoys doing that. He becomes controlled. That kind of language is used too. He's controlled by his devotees. They want a loving exchange with him in such and such way, and he becomes controlled. But he's not controlled. He's the supreme independent person. He doesn't relinquish that supreme independent position. So there's apparent contradictions as we as we learn more about Krishna, we become quite familiar with that territory. There's these apparent contradictions. Just like his arm. His arm was big, but his arm was small, and he's big, but he's small, and he's, you know, he's everything. There's nothing that he's not. Just it's purposefully because the verse was using that phrase aprameya, he can't be estimated by anything of a material with a material yardstick, including anything the mind can do. It's an inconceivableness that's within him. And then it's just lila for the pleasure of his devotees, and which is his pleasure. In the preaching field, anybody that's done some reaching out to people, not just young people. You know, the God word is something you're not supposed to say because people just turn their head the other way and make a face. And part of that has to do with the notion that people have of God. Now, I've been thinking about this because, some of you have children, and some of you have relationships with young people, and the younger generation, this came, I think it's okay to share. While here, there was a Gita camp in Palatine, something like, I don't know, some number, 40, 50 children. of different ages. So the part that I was invited into was deepening our relationship with Krishna. And then after saying and then discussing and then breakout groups, so I got some feedback, and the feedback was the younger group, no problem. The 10 to 12 or 10 to 14 or whatever it was group, they have lots of issues. And it's, you know, God issues. And it was, you know, it wasn't specifically, but it was, you know, the regulations and the thises and the thats and the other things that, you know, they don't like. They don't like chanting, and they don't like regulations, and they like the restrictions, and there's this allergy. It's not just ISKCON, it's the world. You know, it has something to do with the world. It has something to do, those that study these things, it has something to do with parenting. And it has something to do with, so that the point I wanted to make is, it has something to do with the conception of God. If those that have some allergy to God or the God word could understand who Krishna is, it's like really cool. If people can, that can be a big, you know, fandom for Harry Potter, what to speak of Krishna? And he does some more amazing things than Harry Potter could even think of. And it's not fanciful. And it's consciousness elevating. And it brings joy. So, I'm just sharing, you know, time changes in one sense. Time, that is to say, different generations have different views, and that's natural. But, you know, one of the things that's constant through all those changing is younger generation people have a tendency to reject the values of the older generation. I mean, our generation did that for sure. And, you know, it's excessive. And the older generation looks at and scratches her head and say, what's happening with young people today? And the young people go, you know, I'm not going to make the mistakes those people made. And they have a whole set, different set of values. Like, instead of make money, it's, you know, I want to do something that's meaningful to the world and something that, you know, social activism and not just, you know, make money. I see they've got all the money and they're not happy and they've made a mess of stuff. So I don't want that program. And all of those things. But it's not a new thing. It's not just a new generation is like that. Generation after generation. So how to touch the hearts of people that have that allergy to the God word. So we you know, Prabhupada didn't cover Krishna. I mean, he was Prabhupada, and we're not Prabhupada. But he, you know, gave things that were very direct. And kaboom, Hare Krishna explosion. To the same generation that was like rejecting the values of, but it was different. And so that's the point I'm making. The God word is a no-no in preaching circles. Anybody that's preaching knows you don't use the God word. You just don't use it. And not just in China. You don't use it. But then, how long does Krishna have to stay in a box before Krishna comes out of the box when you're a preacher? But, you know, it's, anyway, and just speaking strategies now about reaching the hearts and the minds of younger generation people, if the God word comes out of the box right away, you know, they turn the channel. Like that, you know, you lost them. So what do you do? You know, then there's all this indirect stuff. or bridge preaching, nice euphemism. And that's fine. Prabhupada certainly did that. But he was also very direct at the same time. He wasn't hiding who he was and wasn't hiding who he was serving. But then he made it clear who it was. So it takes empowerment and it takes intelligence and takes all kinds of nice things. You know, Narada Muni didn't just right away tell Vrigari, you know, you're nonsense. Worship Krishna. He didn't. That's not what he did. He said something that was very surprising. I just have one request. What's that? Don't half kill these animals. Kill them completely. Wow. Why? Because they suffer. No. Yeah. And not only they suffer, but you'll have to suffer the same. No. Yeah. Really? It's because he believed him. And so, you know, what do? Break your bow. No, I got a family and I got to do my occupational duty. And my father taught me to half kill the animals and I'm just doing what my dad did. So anyway, he did some indirect messaging and King Prachini Bari, and he just told this whole allegory. Or before teaching King Chitraketu, it was a whole, you know, setup to have him have his attachment to the temporary broken before he could receive transcendental knowledge, and that before he could receive bhakti. It was like 1, 2, 3, and it was a fertile ground. King Chitraketu was in the fast lane and became a pure devotee real fast. But it didn't start there. So we have to be thoughtful, know our audience, and have our hearts connected to Krishna. And Krishna's stories are fantastic. Okay, with that, let's see if there's some discussion.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have a few questions. And the first one I want to ask is, it's kind of technical. What is the Harivamsa?
I mean, what is it?
What is the? It's a book, and is it written by Narad Muni, or is it?
It's spoken by Narad Muni. He's one of the main speakers. Now, I don't know who's the. I don't know how it came. I don't know too much about it. It's not. I don't even know how to get a copy. Okay. But I know something about the other ones we're not so familiar with. You know, Garga Samhita and all those things.
Okay.
I don't know so much about where it comes from. He's one of the principal speakers. But, it's the form. Like most of these Puranic literatures, it's in the question-answer format, and he's one of the person's questions, so he's the speaker because he's questioned. But I don't even know who's the one that's, a sadhu, a rishi or something, that asks, and Narada responds.
Okay. That's fine. And then this line was said during the description of Narad Muni glorifying Krishna. And I heard, his name is not mentioned out of respect. I heard you read that line.
Yes.
And I just wanted to clarify my thought was correct, that this is similar to how usually a wife doesn't directly say the name of a husband, or like, you know, we address.
It sounds that thought came to my mind.
Okay.
I don't know the culture of you respect a person by not saying their name. Mm-hmm. There must be some cultural principle.
Okay.
The uncultured person, like me, you know. But that's what my mind went to when I first read it, and then when I spoke it again this morning.
Okay, just wanted to. I didn't get it initially.
Somehow, it's a cultural thing.
Okay. And then one thing that struck me during this Keshi pastime was the mention that Krishna did not feel pride on killing Keshi. And I think I've heard this a couple times.
Yeah,
mentioned
several times.
And so I was thinking about this. Initially, when I heard it, I was like, that's such an interesting thing to say, because why would Krishna, who would think Krishna is pride, you know, who would associate pride with Krishna anyways? So I was just thinking more about this, and I was wondering if there is a lesson or something more to it, this one point.
My thought is still now with your first question, or the earlier question. And my thought for the earlier question is Prabhupada, not just with wife and husband, but in a matter of respect, like a judge in a courtroom, it's Your Honor, or Mr. President. You know, the media just says Trump. And before it was Obama, or Obama, however you pronounce his name. But, you know, the respect is you don't say the name.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then the family members may say Daddy, and they may say, you know, whatever they may say. So the first name, or they may have a nickname. So that as intimacy increases, like with names of Krishna, it's the primary names of Krishna, not just his position, like Ishwara or Ishwara Parama. It's his name. Then the names that have his relationships with others, then that's further intimacy. So out of respect, it's not named, but Devarshi, that's his position. They don't say Devarshi Narada, it's just Devarshi. So that's some further thought on not naming his name. Now, with pride and some lesson, well, one, there's probably many, but one that's really obvious is to contrast Krishna's position with us. He's in a category of his own. Because when we accomplish something that's difficult, there's pride. I mean, it's human nature. It's the contaminated human nature. And Krishna is not contaminated by, even when he accomplishes something very difficult. Because the build up is, Keshi was the best. He was saving, you know, Kamsa was saving the best for last. He said, you know, I made the mistake of sending Putana, although she was, you know, notoriously powerful. I made a mistake. So now this is Garga Samhita saying, you know, Rishta and Keshi, you're the best. So I'm saving the best for last. So known as being the most vicious, most powerful, most this and that, and Krishna easily defeated him. But there's no pride. Now, let's go the other direction. You know, with everything that exists has its origin in Krishna. Or otherwise it doesn't exist. So what's the pride? What's Krishna's quality of pride? I mean, one of the things it wasn't exactly the material kind of pride, but after killing Arishta, he went to the gopis and saying, you were asking for me to give you protection from Arishta, but the good news is he's gone. There's no more danger. So he was expecting that they would say, oh, hero. But it was, you know, he got the sauce. But it's transcendental. But even the, at least in this case, it wasn't, there was no pride. Pride is, so we're expecting appreciation, if not praise. Mm-hmm. That's pride. And if it doesn't come, rump. Some negative emotion of some kind. Mm-hmm. So it's absent. That's Krishna's position. It's those kinds of pride are not within him. Okay?
I have a couple more questions, but I didn't want to hog the mic.
Go for it.
Okay. These ones, this one is from yesterday's Bhagavatam class. I heard, Maharaj, you say that the Brahma Vivarta Purana is not as authorized as the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering...
Why did I say that?
How it is so, yeah.
Well, Tattva Sandarbha... You know, what's the first section is Pramana Khanda. So amongst Pramanas, there's a hierarchy. There's the senses, there's the mind, and there's Shabda. And amongst Shabda, there's a hierarchy. And amongst Shabda, there's Puranas. And amongst the Puranas, the Bhagavad Purana is the highest. Mm-hmm. Topmost authority. So it was within that context I said what I said.
Okay.
Because there's things that are said in the Puranas that our acharyas don't refer to at all because it's tamasic. Although it's purana, it's for tamasic people. Mm. It's not smells bad. It's for tamasic people. It doesn't carry the same gravity and veracity. That's all.
Okay.
There's topmost pramana, Bhagavatam. So I was just remarking. We don't give the same weight to that as we give to the Bhagavatam.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And this question is from the Balaram Jayanti class. I found it very interesting to hear about the description of why Balaram is 8 days older as opposed to a year, his age description.
Yeah.
And I heard... Something is written by Garga Muni, and Jiva Goswami is saying that that's not...
Is that correct?
Yes. So my thoughts were going to, how do you explain that Garga Muni...
Got it wrong.
Yeah, and Jiva Goswami's pointing
got it right. Because after all, he did the name-giving ceremony. So how can he get it wrong? If he knows all about what Krishna is... Then how come he didn't know what Krishna is in Balaram? Because he did the name-giving ceremony. I have no answer for that. I had the same question. Like, huh? And then if that question mark is over there with that detail, then what about the whole text? Does it come under question? And... It's like there are passages from the Skanda Purana, and there's passages from Tamasic and Rajasic Puranas that our acharyas take the nectar and they present that. They don't present other things because it's not nectar, because it's tamasic. They don't give it a bad name. They just don't touch it. So therefore we need to be guided by our acharyas what to touch, what not to touch. So specifically for our acharya, how it is that many cases, Garga Samhita is referred to by our acharyas. But here's a case where our acharya, Jiva Goswami, is using very clear logic and reason. It can't be. And here's the logic and reason on the authority of the Bhagavatam. So it can't be. So now that doesn't answer how does Garga Muni, how did he get it wrong? It's just not, doesn't have the same gravity as Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, even with Garga Samhita and Garga's the author, we have to be careful and guided by our acharyas. And then you can go further and say, you know, harumph. It's interpolated and put together by somebody other than Garga Muni, and just gave, said Garga Muni said it, and you know, like, you know, scholars do. They just like take things and trash it. They take the Bhagavatam and trash it. They give it a different dating, and they say somebody besides Vyasadeva, and they say all kinds of things. Bhopadeva with the author and such date. And, you know, they, that's their field, is speculation and getting a name for themselves because this and that and the other, that's their reputation. That's their occupation. So, we're, even with Garga Samhita, we're guided by our acharyas which parts we accept. Not knowing the origin, you know, and so many other things. I only need to know, our acharyas often refer to it, and this is one section that Jiva Goswami, it's really, the logic is very clear. Mm-hmm. It can't be like Garga said. It has to be, they were of the same age. Now, exactly on what authority he comes up with or makes the assertion that it was the full moon, the Purnima, wasn't creative writing. There must be some authority. He doesn't state what it is, but there must be some authority or something. Okay.
Mm. It sounds like we need to be very careful when very we study
careful.
The,
yeah. Very careful. It's really easy to go and read something and then say something. Mm-hmm. I just had this exchange I'm reluctant, I won't say the name, but I had this exchange about one ISKCON devotee that has a big following because he says lots of details. And people like the details because it's like, wow, there's something new and there's something new and there's something new. And I haven't heard this speaker, but I've heard from those that have heard this speaker. He embellishes with things that have nothing to do with our Gaudiya Sampradaya, and they're even in contrast to our Gaudiya Sampradaya, and it's just sprinkled into what he says. Mm. I haven't heard the person, but I trust those who have, and so those that are... those that come to me and ask, then, you know, I'm going to say, that's not a person you should regularly hear from. And here's why. Mm-hmm. If you want some people that you like details, here's this and here's that. Very reliable. Absolutely, impeccably reliable. Hear from there. So be discerning as to where you hear from. Because otherwise... you know, you're likely to hear something that's not authentic. And then what? Then it's in your system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
During one of these little visits, it was at somebody's home, and a teenage boy knew all about such and such pastime. And then I inquired, wow, do you read Krishna book? He said, no. His father said he reads the comic books. And, you know, because he reads the comic books, he knows the story. But how accurate is the comic book narration of the story? And it's Krishna's pastimes. Mm. But it's, you know, in language, it's easy for him. And so, and he likes, so he reads them. Mm. And almost for certain, it's not going to be, somewhere in there is going to be something that's, you know, not necessarily poison, but just not accurate. Mm-hmm. For cosmetic reasons or scholarly reasons or whatever the reasons. I've encountered that a number of times. Without, you know, Maharaj Parikshit became contaminated by having a gold crown because the arrangement was the personality of Kali can reside wherever there's gold. So he's got a gold crown, and that's why, you know, and on and on. I mean, it's just in the media or in the comic books or in the videos, and that's what people know. Maharaj Parikshit sat on a tall, you know, really, really tall pole and a little seat up there because he was afraid of the serpent that was going to bite him. Hmm. Where's that? Well, it's, you know, it came from a movie, a depiction of the pastime. And it really misses an essential point. He had no fear. Hmm. He had full shelter of Krishna. And he had Shukadeva Goswami's association. Anyway, maybe it's a minor point, but it's not. So, fortunately we have our acharyas to guide us through that territory. Mm-hmm. Okay. Finished?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. I'm still very new to Bhagavatam and understanding the context of it. The context. I still have... working with Devamadava, and I are piecing it together for me to understand better. So my question...
I can hear you better if you take your mask off.
Oh.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thanks. You can put it back on after, but...
Okay. So I'm still trying to... I still am understanding the context of Bhagavatam. I've only been, lightly hearing of it, now studying it this year.
Good.
My question was centered around Mathura, and when you read how Krishna can give pleasure to his parents in Mathura. And so I was struggling to connect, like, wait, is this, did this pastime with him killing the Kesha demon and him doing this, happen here or in Goloka Vrindavan, like up in that realm, or like, where did this happen?
It happens in the earthly realm. It's his manifest pastimes. And, It's a detail in response to your question, but Bhaktisiddhanta writes that such pastimes as Krishna's leaving Vrindavan and going to Mathura, it's in his earthly pastimes or Prakat Leela. It's not in the Nitya Leela. It's not in this Goloka or Krishna Loka. Not there. There's other things that aren't there. Krishna doesn't take birth in Krishna Loka. He takes birth in his earthly pastimes. So there's things that, but there's a mood. There's a bhava. There's an ecstasy. Oh, Krishna is leaving Vrindavan. But there's not a pastime of leaving Vrindavan. And then the pastime is manifesting that mood through a pastime, so people can see. He gets on a chariot and off he goes. But in Krishna Loka, he doesn't get on a chariot. There's just a mood. So there's resemblance, but not 100% identical. Does that help? Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go to online. Because our online people feel neglected.
The first question is from Jai Nizayagaur Hari Prabhu, and he asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, Narada Muni and Srila Prabhupada preach according to the consciousness of the recipient. Chitrakeshu was in the fast lane, whereas the hunter was in the slow lane. That's just a statement. Okay. The first question is from Sanchari Mataji, and she asks, when Narada is talking to Kamsa, telling him to kill Devaki's children, etc., I was thinking about how he was encouraging a vengeful mentality, similar to when the mind, when unchecked, does the same thing when a living entity feels taken advantage of, and as the living entity simply reacts, enters into Kamsa, into a Kamsa-like state. Is this an appropriate understanding?
Yeah. Yeah.
The next question is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhu, and he asks, is indiscriminate exploitation of Mother Nature and human beings leading the younger generation to human values and respect for Mother Nature?
Well, how far back in time do you want to go to find where people were not disrespecting Mother Nature? How old is that one? Now, it's certainly ramped up, and it's not that younger generation people didn't find objection when older generation people were doing that. No, it's not part of our experience because we weren't around then, but I'm just putting two and two together and coming up with four.
And the second part is, what led the older generation in the opposite direction?
Greed. Uncontrolled senses. That's not new either.
Oh, okay, so Jai Nitayagor Hari Prabhu has a question, but like it's split, so I'll just read the first part.
Okay, go ahead, one part at a time.
The first part, was Narada Muni and Srila Prabhupada preach according to the consciousness of the recipient. Chitraketu was in the fast lane, whereas the hunter was in the slow lane. Narada Muni is preaching according to the consciousness of his audience. Oh, that's okay.
That's a comment.
Yeah, and then the next part is we're aware of very high standards of Krishna consciousness. Is it reasonable to follow a path that is considerate of our material conditioning when higher paths are available?
Yeah. Acceptance and progress. We should be eager to go to the higher, but we accept where we are and move from there.
The next question is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhu, and he asks, what leads some of the elevated devotees to feel really uneasy in this material world to the extent that they want to leave the world despite the fact that they're fully absorbed in Guru and Krishna thoughts? Examples, one of our Goswamis, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and lately, His Holiness, Bhakti Charu Maharaj.
I don't know if those are examples of being eager to leave. Either one of them. But putting that to the side, supposing there is somebody, then, you know, if they're in such an elevated state as is being described, then it's super soul inspired. Next. That's it. Okay. Pass the microphone over here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I had two questions from yesterday's class. When you were describing the past lives of Keshi Demon, he was one of the devotees.
Gandharvas.
Gandharvas Maharaj. And basically he was cursed to become a demon. When you were describing that pastime, I was just thinking about the principle of bhakti. We say that whatever bhakti we do, it is actually preserved. And so I was also reflecting on Prahlad Maharaj and Vibhishan. So even if Keshi demon, that devotee Gandharva was cursed to become a demon, on the principle of bhakti being preserved, it seems to be quite contrasting to how, why not be like Prahlad Maharaj and Vibhishan, even though they were born in a demoniac family, they still acted as devotees.
For Krishna's pleasure. Jain Vijay. For Krishna's pleasure. So, you know, I'm not going to determine what's Krishna's pleasure. But if Krishna wants, then somebody does this, and Krishna wants, somebody does that. They're teaching, they're setting a different example and providing pleasure for Krishna in different ways. That's good enough for me. What's your second question?
The second question is also related to this pastime, Maharaj.
Which one?
The same pastime.
Which one?
Going to the garden and the flower. So their intention, they were not purposefully doing it, but they were cursed to become demons. So similarly in our lives, when we do something without unknowingly or out of ignorance, we say that sometimes the Lord forgives. So I was just trying to see, understand for myself, like, what are some circumstances when, in our devotional path, when we are forgiven and whereas in some other instances when we are punished, not trying to...
Well, just going back to, you know, the response to why the circumstances played out the way that they played out, instead of, you know, is there was a purpose. You know, it's connected to your first question. There was a purpose for Keshi to do what Keshi did, etc., etc. If the Lord has a purpose, then that will be fulfilled. And Lord has another purpose, then that will be fulfilled. That's all it takes. And, you know, who's going to determine his purpose? Well, it's not you and me. Or Prahlad and Keshi. You know, Prahlad says, the Lord sent me, he says to Sringadev, you sent me to this world to teach the way of pure devotional service. So that's what he did. Bhishma says, who can understand the plan of the Lord? So if you wanted to be better than Bhishma, Dave, go right ahead. But, you know, the plan is the plan, and it works out this way, at this time, and that way, another way. So, there's a plan of the Lord. It's simple. Don't have to beat your brain. It's really simple.
Thank you.
We serve from whatever the position. King Chitraketu served from the position of Vritrasura. And Keshi served from the position of Keshi. And there, you know, there are different entities and different purposes and different functions and different degrees of spiritual attainment and so on. But the Lord has his plan and we, you know, we accept it. However, so you're specific to your question about, you know, how are we to understand a circumstance in our life, this or that, that's, you know, the application point. How are we to take this understanding? Well, we're not special people. This is me speaking. We're not special people. We're covered. And there's kindness coming, and take the kindness that's coming. And if we make a mistake, we take responsibility for our mistakes. And we keep going. In receiving the mercy that's been given to us. Accepting responsibility for our mistakes. Let Krishna decide the rest. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
There's a question here. There's a question back there. Go ahead. You go.
Maharaj, this question is based on the conversation between Narada and Krishna, where Krishna says, why are you asking when you know that I act out of my desire? And Narada responds, you inspire me to ask from my heart, it's the super soul that's inspiring me to ask. But when we ask Krishna, is it inspired by the super soul or is it chatter of the mind?
What do you think? Next. We're not so elevated. We're not so Krishna conscious. So generally it's the mind. And there may be some, you know, special inspired by super soul thing. But, you know, we...
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Should be cautious about thinking, oh, a super soul inspired me to something. Be cautious. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, this is a question about talking to scholarly people. And I have one specific question that I came across. Someone specifically asked me this question that, why do you chant and what are you looking for from your chanting? And I'm just a little bit cautious about answering that question to a scholarly person, knowing that the caution is that that person has, he's going to look through a different lens, and my answer would be different to a devotee than to a scholarly person. Knowing my own conviction, like I know that I'm on a very neophyte stage where my own, I'm not doing it from a place of realization, and I do have mixed motivations. But I'm also very careful of protecting my own faith and be cautious about answering to... So I just need a little guidance on that.
I think a lot depends upon the person, the relationship with the person as well. I mean, you can give a scholarly answer or you can give a personal answer, and my guess is your nature is a personal answer is, you know, the path that you would be more comfortable with. And that is to say, I'm a neophyte and I have faith, a neophyte faith, and, you know, In all scriptural teachings, there's emphasis on the name of God. And this particular name of God is recommended. You know, I'm a neophyte. It's not, I can't say I have attraction for this name, but it's recommended. And it's the primary means of deliverance. And so I wish to be delivered. Maybe not strongly enough, but I wish to be delivered. And that's, you know, I have faith that this is going to help me become delivered. And I have a long way to go. You know, with scholarly people, this is something I've learned from devotees that are involved in college outreach. You know, I don't think it's changed over the past couple of decades. it's politically correct to express your faith without imposing your faith or judging others that have a different faith. It's perfectly politically correct. This is, you know, from among scholarly puffy-wuffies. You can just say, this is my faith, and I'm following my faith. And that's, you know, you're not imposing it on anybody. Not to say a scholarly person is asking you, you want to get me into what you're doing. You're not, that's not the question. It's, you know, a personal question. So it's okay if in a scholarly circle to say this is my faith. But, you know, what language you use, you know, I guess it depends on the person and their openness, and it's not a sectarian, it's not a, this is what it is. You know, maybe you could ask them, are you comfortable with that idea? That in religions of the world, there's emphasis on the name of God, and someone who takes shelter or takes, you know, has faith in the name of God and calling the name of God, is that something that makes you uncomfortable? I mean, they're asking you a personal question. You can ask them a personal question. I mean, it depends on the person and the circumstance. Okay. Anything else in the room? Two more online. Pass the microphone.
This question is from Sanchari Mataji, and she asks, Guru Maharaj, in the Abhicharan series, Bhakti Charu Swami writes that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said that we are actually devotees of Radharani and that we love Krishna because Radharani loves Krishna. Why is there not more literature that is widely known in the Gaudiya Sampradaya on the glories of Srimati Radharani?
I can take a guess, and my guess is, you know, there's a caution about unqualified people hearing a lot about Radharani, because of the tendency to imitate and the unqualified people doing foolish things.
And then the follow-up to that is, with the literature that does exist, how do we distinguish between which to read and which to not even attempt because of its elevated status?
For Sanchari, at your stage, just stick to Prabhupada's books for quite some time, because you become immersed in the mood and the message before you start venturing.
And then the next question is from Giri Votikota Prabhu, and he asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, while performing service at temple, if we get recognized, we offer to Guru and Krishna. My question is, does the recognition come from desire to get recognized, and is it impurity?
Does the recognition come from a desire to get recognized? I think it depends on the person who's giving the recognition and how, you know. In other words, there can be all kinds of different reasons. Some people are just socially, they understand it's just nice, somebody that does something nice, and they say, oh, that was nice. It doesn't have to have a deeper meaning. Oh, because I wanted the recognition. Now here comes somebody that's nice, saying you did nice. Don't get overcomplicated. That's it.
Then he asks, like, is it impurity? Like, the.
If we're eager, yes. And if we're disappointed when it doesn't come, that's a sign that we were eager. Prabhupada Gita.